You are about to hear a live broadcast on the Heritage Radio Network in a few moments. Stick with us. You are about to hear a live broadcast on the Heritage Radio Network in a few moments. Stick with us.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins. I work for Fairway Markets in the New York area. And we're awfully proud to support Heritage Radio. And we care so much about everything that goes on out here at Roberta's in their studio, because they talk to people who are serious about food. And that's what we are at Fairway, is we're serious about food. We just care very deeply about you as a customer, and how you cook and what you cook with and how you entertain. And that's why we love to support Heritage Radio, because it's pretty much the same thing. It's wanting to find happiness through serious food and people who are serious about it and care about learning everything there is to learn about it. And that's we're kindred spirits. If it's something worth having in your kitchen, you're going to find it at Fairway. And if there's somebody worth talking to about food, you're going to find them on Heritage Radio. And we will be supporting you guys for a long, long time. At Fairway, I'm your personal grocer, Steve Jenkins, Fairway Market.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Fairway Market. Welcome to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host, Chef Smarty Pants. And, you know, I really like being outside. I'm sure I've talked about that a lot. But I like being outside. I love the outdoors. Most days I would rather be outside walking around than staying home, regardless of the weather. And, a lot of that has to do with, you know, the way I grew up. We spent a lot of time outside. We had this little boat. We'd go out fishing on Long Island Sound. I used to ride my bike a lot. I went to a camp where we spent a lot of time outside. And, you know, and now in the summer up at Tiny Bungalow Land, we're outside all the time, partially because the house is so small that it's almost impossible to be inside. But we're outside all the time, hiking, swimming. We're outside a lot, and that's how I like it, as much time as I can. But that also means that over all of these years, I have gotten a lot of sun on me. Plus, of course, growing up in the 80s, a lot of intentional tanning took place. Hours and hours of laying outside, trying to bake for all the wrong reasons. And so, of course, what that adds up, you know, all those years add up, and it adds up to damaged skin. It adds up to dark blotches and spots and, you know, frowning dermatologists peering at your face through a magnifying glass from 2 inches away, kind of looking grim. And so because of those frowning dermatologists, I've sort of had to make this effort to undo some of that damage that I've been subjecting myself to over the years. So instead, I've now been subjecting myself to something called peels. So a peel, if you're not familiar with a peel, is when you go to a dermatologist's office or to a spa and they put acid on your face. And they put acid on your damaged skin to damage your skin so much more that it then peels off. Smart, right? Makes sense. So yeah, my dermatologist recommended peels to get rid of some of that damage. And, you know, it's not, I don't have skin cancer or anything, but, you know, she said there's some damage. Maybe she was just trying to make some money. But then I got this Groupon for peels. So, you know, thrifty me, I got the download of those Groupons and I grabbed them. And so I've been going occasionally. I've done a few before. It's nothing new. I've done it. But so last week I had a peel that seemed to peel with it. An exuberance that I had never experienced previous peels to be. This peel went crazy. And usually you get the treatment. You know, they put the acid on your face. And then it takes like 2 days and then you start to peel. And so I did on Wednesday. And by Friday, I was like shedding like crazy. While I was teaching, while I was around food, my face was coming off. And it lasted pretty much up until this morning. I kind of just buffed the last of it off. But so, yeah, the last couple of days, my face has basically been peeling off. But it's been revealing this like shiny, youthful new me underneath. The one that was hiding under a layer of cured leather, basically. Anyway, so this is not a skincare show. This is a food show. So, you know, I'm getting to the point. You know, it takes me a while sometimes. So on Saturday, in the middle of all this exfoliating, I was, you know, in peak peeling mode. My face was like flaking off like in snowdrifts all around me. And I wear a lot of black, and I had to really keep reminding myself not to wear black because it wasn't pretty. So Saturday we went over to my sister's for dinner and to hang out. And after dinner, she served a pomelo, kind of just cut up in pieces. And we started talking about them. So pomelos are these big citrus fruit, if you're not sure what I'm talking about. They look like gigantic grapefruits, but they're not really grapefruits. So we were talking about the pomelo while we were eating it, and we were talking about why they have such thick peel, such thick skin. You know, we were speaking of peels and peel and peeling. They were all laughing at my face, and we were talking about the peel of the pomelo and why it's so thick, because it's got this like half-inch thick layer of what looks like white cotton insulation underneath the exterior colored layer of the skin. And so we started talking about if there's any use for pomelo peel at all. Other, you know, like you can eat the fruit, but what do you do with the peel? Some citrus peel has use. Some other fruit peels have use. So that, of course, then led to the origin of the word orange, and whether the name of the fruit orange predated the name of the color orange. Was an orange called an orange before there was a color called orange? And the answer turns out to be yes. And also, why are there all these towns in New Jersey called Orange? Because we were in New Jersey. And then, of course, we had to look up the whole like Royal Dutch House of Orange. Why were they the House of Orange? And William of Orange, who was connected to them, and then why also in France is there the city of Orange, and were all those places named for the fruit, or was the fruit named for them? It turned into this whole big long discussion of citrus fruits. I'm not going to get into that. This is not a show about the orange tonight. Just go to Wikipedia. That's where I get all my information anyway. But luckily we had an iPad sitting right on the table, so plink, 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 we went to the iPad, found all our information, and maybe next time I'll talk about oranges. But tonight I want to talk about pomelos. That's where I'm going with this. Those big greenish, yellowish faux grapefruits that you see in the market. I think people have probably bought them at one time or another thinking they were buying a grapefruit, and then they cut into it and they have, you know, have an inch thick skin and this oddly dry flesh inside, and they think, what the hell did I just buy? So we're going to take a very short break here. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about pomelos. I won't talk about my face peeling off anymore. I'm done with that. It's finished. We'll be back with more talk about pomelos.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Sunday at 3:30 p.m., tune in to We Dig Plants with garden designers Carmen DeVito and Alice Marcus Krieg of Groundworks, Inc. The girls delve into our human relationship with plants as food, medicine, fodder, and a source of beauty and inspiration. They bring the culture to horticulture and discuss such topics as botany how-to, cultivation, horticultural history, garden design trends, and all things generally budding. Again, that's every Sunday at 3:30 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, Chef Smarty Pants, your host. And remember, you can always find this show on the Heritage Radio Network website, archived. But you can also find it on iTunes. All the Heritage Radio Network shows are on iTunes. And Why We Cook was in the top 100 this week. I think number 80. Ooh. Top 100 food casts on iTunes. That's big. So thank you, people who downloaded and made me number 80. That's great. Anyway, welcome back. I'm talking about pomelos. Pomelos are a citrus fruit. They're the biggest citrus fruit. And this all started because I was at my sister's and we were eating dinner and she served one cut up and we started talking about the peel of the pomelo and what is it good for, if it's good for anything. And so, you know, I did a little bit of research and I was reading about pomelos. They are native to Southeast Asia and it's interesting because it's thought that the grapefruit is a naturally occurring hybrid of the orange and the pomelo. Yeah. And, you know, the grapefruit's called the grapefruit because they grow in clusters. Unlike any other citrus fruit, they hang in clusters like grapes. So they got this stupid name, grapefruit, which doesn't really make any sense. For some reason, English speakers who named fruits were not all that creative. Oh, they hang in clusters like grapes. We'll call it the grapefruit. Well, it's not really that descriptive or poetic, but anyway, pomelos taste like a grapefruit that's had its acid component stripped away. Maybe the acid was taken out and put on my face when I had that peel. I don't know. But, you know, it's got like sort of all the grapefruit flavor and sweetness, but without any of the acidity to it. So it's kind of nice. If you're not a fan of grapefruit because of the acid, pomelo might just be your fruit. That might be the one. I like the acid in grapefruit, but I also like the flavor of pomelo. And the first time I ate them was back in Nam in 98. I was still there. No one told me the war was over. No, I was in Vietnam in 1998 for the first of many trips. And I had a pomelo and crab salad. It was like a combination. It was really good because the segments of the pomelo aren't juicy and messy like regular grapefruit, which I like, but they're kind of dry and crumbly, but in like a good way dry and crumbly. Like there's juice, but it's not messy juice. It's like a much neater, cleaner eating experience, eating a pomelo. And it's good, like mixed with seafood like that, with crab, it's a really nice combination. The trick when you're eating them or cooking with them is to get all of that thick peel and pith off of it. The pith is that white cottony stuff underneath the skin. It's sort of like insulation. And you have to really cut it off. You can't just peel and you have to take a knife to it and cut it off. Or you can just cut it into wedges and then just chew the wedges. That's what we were doing this weekend. But, you know, so what about that skin? We were talking about whether that skin had any use at all. So, you know, my peeling face at the dinner table inspired questions about the peel. And the first thing I could think of was just candying it like other citrus peel. That's really all I do with other citrus peel. But I did a little bit of research and pretty much what I found was that you can you can candy the peel or you can make marmalade out of it. So, you know, marmalade is different from other jams and preserves because it's made from peel, not fruit. Did you know that? That's why marmalade's kind of bitter. So you could make a pomelo peel marmalade. That might be really good. I read about people candying it and then dipping it in chocolate. Apparently it's nice that way. And it's also sometimes used in Chinese cooking. Like in Sichuan cooking, they often use a lot of tangerine peel and orange peel. But pomelo peel, from what I read, is used in sweet desserts in China. But then I was going a little bit further in my search, and I came up with this food blog from Hong Kong that this woman runs, and she had an entry in there about this restaurant that she found that served this very old-fashioned dish, Hong Kong-style Chinese dish, that is a dish of cooked pomelo peel. So in the picture, it was like a slab of peel. It looked like most of the pith had been taken away. And I think it had been like boiled to remove the bitterness from the peel. And then she described it as pomelo peel in shrimp roe gravy with mushrooms and broccoli. Now, just the thought of that kind of makes my stomach lurch a little bit for some reason. It may be the description. I don't know. I don't know if I want to eat a braised slab of grapefruit peel, pomelo peel, and not with shrimp roe gravy. I think a lot gets lost in the translation. Although people in Hong Kong speak English, it's not really a translation issue. It's a description issue. It didn't sound good to me. And I have never heard of anybody eating it this way, but she said it's some really old Hong Kong dish and she hadn't seen it in years, and there it was, and she was very excited about it. But then I looked a little further into her blog, and it turns out that this blog is written by a woman who eats one meal a day. That's her big shtick, is that she eats one meal a day, and she also fasts regularly for days and days on end. And that's what she's promoting. So maybe that's why she's eating pieces of braised grapefruit peel, because it has no calories. I don't know. I can't really trust someone as an authority on food who doesn't actually eat. Just saying. Right? So for what it's worth, she says it's eaten as a regular dish. I don't know. And then, of course, in, you know, my mind, which tends to be a little cluttered with memories and facts and things. I was supposed to take the test for Jeopardy last week, actually, online, and then I got home too late, and I was really disappointed, because I think I'd be really good on Jeopardy. But anyway, I remembered this article that I had read years ago, I couldn't remember where, about Cuba, and about how during the years in Cuba that are referred to as the special period, the Castro regime euphemistically calls those years the special period. These were the years right after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and the Soviet Union used to be the major trade partner with Cuba. Cuba would load up freighters full of sugar, ship the sugar to Russia and China, and then Russia would send them back things like wheat and rice and, you know, food, because Castro could never manage to get it together to have the farmers produce anything but sugar. They were like a total monocrop kind of culture. And so when the Soviet Union collapsed, the Cubans stopped getting food aid from them, and people started to starve. People started to get, you know, really desperate. There was no food, basically. They weren't trading with the U.S. There's, you know, been an embargo, and the embargo was tightened in 92, and that's when the special period basically was, in the early 90s, right after the fall of communism. So anyway, I remember reading this article about how people became so desperate that there was like a TV chef who had a program that the Cubans had been eating really well up until the collapse of the Soviet Union. They had plenty of food. And then after this, they became desperate. So this TV chef who had had a show did a TV show about taking grapefruit peels and breading them and frying them and eating them that way, like chicken cutlets, or taking the grapefruit peels and grinding them up and making them into like faux burger patties. I mean, that doesn't just sound like repulsive to me, but that sounds like horrible and tragic and sad and sickening in its desperation. Well, that's what happened, Cuba. But I don't really want to do a show about that either tonight. I don't want to do a show about Cuba and their desperation and the craziness of the Castro government. And, you know, I don't want to get too political. But anyway, that was all that came to mind when I thought about like using pomelo or grapefruit peels for anything other than candying. And so ultimately, that's what it comes down to, is you use citrus peels basically either for candying, for marmalade, or as garnish, or to add a little bit of citrusy flavor to food. Like if you were baking a cookie and you wanted it to be lemony, but you didn't want to add moisture, you didn't want to add lemon juice, you would add lemon zest, because that comes from the peel, and the peel is full of oil, and that's how you would do it. So basically, it all comes down to pomelo. The flesh is great. The peel, not so great, not so useful. There you go. All right, we're going to take another quick break, and then when we come back, a little more about skin and peels. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Fairway Market. Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host, Chef Smarty Pants. And remember also about this show that if you like it, you can become a fan of it on Facebook. Just look for us at Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network on Facebook and become a fan or like it or whatever it is now. It seems like on Facebook they change the rules every couple of weeks. So whatever the current mode of expressing your appreciation for something is on Facebook, you can do that. And you can also leave me a message, send me questions. I've been corresponding with a few of you lately, and that's been great. And I love that. So keep it coming. So anyway, this show tonight is sort of following this theme of skin, right? I started out talking in the first segment about how I had to get these this chemical peel on my face to undo all my years of skin damage from sun. And so I had to get this acid thing on my face, and then my face started to peel off in big flaky sheets of dead skin, and it was pretty disgusting. But then that led to this whole conversation over the weekend about grapefruits and pomelos and using the skin of them, and then that got me really thinking about how we encourage people to use citrus zest in their cooking to add flavor to their food, to add citrus flavor. Now, in theory, that's a great thing to do. I'm all about total utilization of product. I don't like waste. You know, I'm very thrifty. And that's a great thing if you're going to squeeze the juice out of an orange, that then you could get some value out of its skin too. But my big problem with all of this is that citrus crops are so heavily sprayed. They are sprayed and sprayed and sprayed with all kinds of chemicals and colorants and dyes and fungicides and waxes. I mean, the amount of crap sprayed on citrus fruit is frightening. And it's not easy to find organic citrus. I haven't seen any. I mean, maybe I'll have to look, but I haven't seen much organic citrus around. And so I would say that I would avoid using the zest or the citrus fruit peel in things because of that. Now, many recipes, like if you're candying citrus peel, tell you to blanch it 3 or 4 or 5 times to get rid of the bitterness. And I think probably in the blanching process, you'll wash away a lot of that stuff on the surface. But if you're not blanching, if you're going to use raw citrus zest, scrub the crap out of the surface of that fruit because there's a lot of nasty stuff on there. And even just think about all the hands that have handled that citrus. You know, you don't think about that because you peel them and you eat what's inside. But so nobody washes that fruit because it's not like you're going to bite into it like an apple, right? So ew, think about those hands that have touched it. So at least give it a wash, scrub it, you know, a little scrubby, even use a little detergent on there or something. It wouldn't hurt. So anyway, I teach in a culinary school, you know that. And in our curriculum, we have this one recipe that we do that I like. It's good, but I have a problem with it. Of course, I have a problem with everything. The recipe is for Arctic char, which is a great fish, by the way. You know, I think I've talked about Arctic char not that long ago. It's in the salmonoid family, but it's not farmed like salmonoids. So it's better for you. I think actually there is farmed Arctic char, but apparently it's much better. Anyway, I like Arctic char. The recipe is for Arctic char that gets served like with this salad, this kind of Mediterranean-y, vaguely Mediterranean salad, and it's really good. But then in the recipe it says to garnish the whole dish with the zest of 1 orange and 1 lemon. So that's an entire orange, an entire lemon cut off in little thin strips to serve 4 people. That is a ton of citrus zest. Ugh, so much zest. So what I do when I teach the classes, instead of having the students use their little zesters, which are those tools that have like 5 little holes in a row and create long ribbons, I have them use their microplane, which is a grater that gives you a very fine dusting of things. So I just say, just hit it with like just a little zest like that, a dust, and that's enough, because I don't want to be eating all that peel. Plus, raw citrus peel tastes bad. I don't understand why people want to put that on food. It doesn't taste good. It's really bitter. And not in a good bitter kind of way, because you know I love bitter. But bad bitter, like harsh bitter. Doesn't taste good. It's overpowering. I just don't understand it. Why would I want to bite into a big mouthful of strips of raw citrus peel? I would not. Would not enjoy that. So anyway, thinking about that Arctic char dish with all of that citrus zest on it also reminded me that when we do that Arctic char, we leave the skin on it and we sear it. We really saute. We don't sear it until that skin gets really, really crisp. And I thought, wow, this whole skin theme is really coming together for me this week. We started with my face, then we talked about the pomelo, then we talked about the citrus zest, and now we're onto the fish skin. It's like the whole thing just kind of laid itself out before me this week. So I thought, let's talk about fish skin too and wrap up the whole skin theme. And last week I did that whole show about the chicken under the brick and about that doing that because you get the chicken skin really crisp. It's like a whole world of culinary dermatology that I'm exploring here. So then the other day, I was teaching my new group at work, and it was sauté day. We do 3 days of sauté, and this was day two of sauté, and on day two of sauté is when we start talking about fish. And we sautéed some salmon skin on. And so I was going through the lesson and talking about what we were going to do and how we were going to leave the skin on and get the skin all crispy, and one of my students raised a hand and asked a question. I said, yes, what's the question? And the student said, you can eat fish skin? Yeah, you can eat fish skin. Fish skin's really good. You've never eaten fish skin? And they were like, no, I would never eat fish skin. I said, really? Do you eat chicken skin? And they said, yeah. I said, well, you can eat fish skin too. So it was like a revelation for this kid. I think the skin is the best part of the fish if it's really crispy. Not if it's like steamed, but if you get it really crispy, it's like it's like fish bacon, really, because the skin is where most of the omega-3s are. Most of that good fat that you get from fish, at least in oily fish, it comes from the skin, because right under the skin, there's actually a layer of subcutaneous fat, just like we have a layer of subcutaneous fat right under our skin, too. And so when you saute an oily fish, like an Arctic char or salmon, with the skin on, and you want the skin to be really crispy, you kind of cook it almost more like you were cooking bacon or a duck breast, where you cook it really, really slowly over low heat, and that fat has time to kind of melt and render and get really crispy, and then it crisps up the skin. So the key is to do it over lower heat than you normally would and cook it longer than you normally would. So what you have to do when you're doing this, here's the instructional portion of the show. Make sure, first of all, that the skin on your fish is scaled. Make sure it's totally dry. Dry, 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 dry. You can make it even drier by taking the back of a spoon or a paring knife and scraping it. And you scrape it out. You, like, squeegee the moisture out of the skin. It gets even drier. Then make a few little cuts in it, a few little score marks to keep it flat. Heat up your pan dry. Add some oil, like some canola. Let the oil get hot and then turn down the heat a little bit. Then put your fish in and immediately lower the heat. The fish is going to want to curl, so then you have to like press it down. You kind of control it. Like I tell them in school, you control that fish. It doesn't control you. Hold it down a little until it surrenders and then it'll stop curling. Make sure it's not sticking and then leave it alone. Turn that heat way down and that fat's going to render out nice and slow. It's going to soak into the skin, make the skin really crispy. And that fat and that skin is going to insulate the fish from overcooking. So you can cook it most of the way on the skin side, and you'll know when it's time to turn, because the fish will start to turn opaque, and it'll be opaque almost all the way up to the top surface of where the flesh is still raw. And then you just flip it over, give it a couple minutes, boom, you're done. The skin will be shatteringly crisp, like well-cooked bacon. And that's what you're looking for. Shatteringly thin, crispy skin on your fish, not on your face. We know what happens to you when you do that. Anyway, we're out of time. So we'll see you next week on Why We Cook. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Foods USA. In late March, Dan, Andrea, Patrick, and the Heritage team are traveling to the coldest reaches of the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont to help the Cantor family tap sugar maple trees. Then the maple sap will flow down to the sugar house where it is boiled gently over a wood fire just as it has been for generations. Just a few days later, this grade A amber syrup will be poured into the beautiful glass jugs and sent to you for pancakes, waffles, desserts, glazing hams, or just drinking by the spoonful. There's only a limited supply, so order today. Each 1-liter bottle is $45, including delivery. Delivery will be at the end of March, and we will notify you of the exact shipping date. Each shipment will include a CD explaining the whole process. You can also follow us on YouTube while we work and bottle. In the meantime, you can head over to the Heritage Radio Network archives and listen to Linda Palacio talk about maple syrup on her show, A Taste of the Past, Episode 12. For more information, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Join wine impresarios Aaron Fitzpatrick and Brian DeMarco as they dish out on the latest industry news with winemakers and tastemakers on Heritage Radio Network's revamped wine show, Unfiltered. Aaron Fitzpatrick, one of the first hosts on HRN with her program At the Root of It, amps up the volume and unfiltered content with co-host Brian DeMarco in this 2011 Redux. True to the original format, Aaron and Brian will keep you abreast of current happenings and break down the news and global events, distilling complex into anecdotal stories that inspire. From media and political events to hailstorms in Argentina, no topic is out of bounds. Tune in every week to hear them chat up the industry's biggest personalities and host on-air tastings with visiting vintners and the country's hottest sommeliers. Whether you're an expert or an enthusiast, Unfiltered demystifies wine and lets you know what it really takes to get a bottle from the vineyard to your neighborhood wine shop. Unfiltered broadcasts live every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network. The following is a public service announcement from the Museum of Food and Drink. Dave Arnold and Patrick Martins have gathered a team of New York's most innovative chefs and bartenders to create a 9-course fundraiser lunch at Del Posto, Sunday, March 27th. Their intent? To kickstart the greatest food museum in the world. The menu for this unprecedented event is derived from educational themes of the museum. Chefs will draw inspiration from sources outside their normal sphere. How will a cutting-edge chef handle the Paleolithic, or a dish only using pre-Columbian ingredients? What will a modern Italian chef do with ancient Rome? The chefs include David Chang of Omofuku, Wiley Dufresne of WD-50, Mark Ladner of Del Posto, Nils Noren of the French Culinary Institute, Cesare Casella of Salumeria Rossi, Carlo Maracci of Roberta's, Brooks Headley of Del Posto, and Christina Tozzi of Momofuku Milk Bar. Bartenders include Audrey Sanders of Pegu Club, Thomas Waugh of Death & Company, Simon Ford of Pernod Ricard, Damon Bolte of Prime Meats, and Eben Clem of BR Guest Restaurants. Proceeds from the event will directly support the Museum of Food and Drink. Tickets are very limited and $250 per person. To purchase tickets, please visit mofad.eventbrite.com. That's mofad.eventbrite.com. Once again, mofad.eventbrite.com. Sponsored by Pernod Ricard, Heritage Foods USA, Pat LaFrieda Meats, Barterhouse Wines, Del Posto Restaurant.